Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 35. Saparisakivacho nisamyamate Nijaparayo kalayo ratam niveshya Sikhavatipaya sanikayo akshna Etavati partha sakirati mamastu On the battlefield, Saki Vachaha, command of the friend, Nishamya, after hearing, Madhye, in the midst, Nija, his own, Parayo, and the opposite party, Balayo, strength. Ratham, chariot, Niveshya, having entered, Sitavati, while standing there, Parasainika, of the soldiers on the opposite side, Ayu, duration of life, Akshna, by looking over, Vitavati, end of diminishing, Partha, O Arjuna, son of Partha, Kunti, Sakhe, unto the friend, Rati, intimate relation, Mama, my, Astu, let there be. Translation, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. In the obedience to the command of his friend, Lord Sri Krishna entered the arena of the battlefield of Kurukshetra between the soldiers of Arjuna and Duryodhana, and while there he shortened the lifespans of the opposite party by his merciful glance. This was done simply by looking at the enemy. Let my mind be fixed upon that Krishna. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, text 21-25, Arjuna ordered the infallible Lord Sri Krishna to place his chariot between the phalanxes of the soldiers. He asked him to stay there until he had finished observing the enemies he had to face in the battle. When the Lord was so asked, he at once did so, just like an order carrier. And the Lord pointed out all the important men on the opposite side, saying, here is Bhishma, here is Drona, and so on. The Lord, being the Supreme Living Being, is never the order supplier or order carrier of anyone, whoever he may be. But out of his causeless mercy and affection for his pure devotees, sometimes he carries out the order of the devotee like an awaiting servant. By executing the order of a devotee, the Lord becomes pleased, as a father is pleased to carry out the order of his small child. This is possible only out of pure transcendental love between the Lord and his devotees. And Bhishmadev was quite aware of this fact. He therefore addressed the Lord as friend, as the friend of Arjuna. The Lord diminished the duration of life of the opposite party by his merciful glance. It is said that all the fighters who assembled on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained salvation by personally seeing the Lord at the time of death. Therefore, his diminishing the duration of life of Arjuna's enemy does not mean that he was partial to the cause of Arjuna. Factually, he was merciful to the opposite party because they would not have attained salvation by dying at home in the ordinary course of life. Here was a chance to see the Lord at the time of death and thus attain salvation from material life. Therefore, the Lord is all good, and whatever he does is for everyone's good. Apparently, it was for the victory of Arjuna, his intimate friend, but factually it was for the good of Arjuna's enemies. Such are the transcendental activities of the Lord, and whoever understands this also gets salvation after quitting this material body. The Lord does no wrong in any circumstance because he is the absolute, all good at all times. Om Agyana Timirandasya Hinandana Shalakaya Shakshu Kumbhintan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurubhena Mahal Shri Chaitanya Minobisam Sabitamina Bhutale Swayam Bhagavami Dirati Swapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vashalam Pangum Mangaite Girin Yakkatamaham Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpatrivischa Chupasindrivya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavlivyo Vaishnavibhu Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha, Shiva Sari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're still moving through the chapter entitled The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma Dev is teaching not only those on the battlefield, but also he's teaching us how to perfect our life, as our life will be tested. The most important point of our life is actually that moment when the soul exits from the body. So in normal materialistic society, of course, there's so many important, so-called important events in one's life, different rites of passage, and there's big parties, you know, enjoying all these different things. You know, your birthday, when you become a teenager for the first time, when you go out and have a new job, etc. There's so many so-called important events that people are celebrating, of course, in the mode of ignorance. And actually, it's not that there's big yajnas that are being carried out and glorification of the Supreme Lord and the living entity at these different functions. So actually, any activity that is not centered around Krishna is useless labor. And you know, people are very excited about having birthday parties, you know, celebrating when they came into ignorance. But if we enlighten them about what birth actually means, I don't think anyone wants to celebrate their birth. They can read the chapter in third canto, Movements of the Living Entities, and they can understand what actually birth means. The so-called beauty of birth, or beauty of material existence, is nicely elaborated in those chapters in the third canto. So how the living entity is suffering, how the fortunate living entity prays in the womb. So it's not all living entities in the womb are praying, it's the fortunate one who gets the mercy of Krishna. Prays in the womb to be delivered from the entrapment of the material energy. So this is the situation of birth. It's not such a pretty affair that generally material civilization tries to point out. So there's huge propaganda for birth in this world. But birth can only mean death. So if we come in ignorance in this world, and by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we get to understand what actually birth and death mean in material existence. And if we don't get out of that cycle of birth and death, we continuously suffer birth and death over and over again. So Yudhisthira Maharaj was asked this question, I think in previous days, someone mentioned this, that Yamaraj had asked him, actually, what is the most amazing thing in material creation? And Maharaj Yudhisthira responds, Ahani ahani bhutani gachanti hayamalayam sheshas param ichanti kim ascharyam ataparam. So ahani ahani, day after day, and we can also witness this, day after day we see death happening. And many living entities are being born, many living entities are dying, and they are going to Yamalayan, to the abode of death. Yet somehow the other one living entity is thinking, this will not happen to me. And if you ever see maybe documentaries, or some of us have seen it live, when an animal is being slaughtered, it's chewing on some grass and his entire family is being slaughtered, and he's thinking, no, this is not going to happen to me. And so it's chewing its grass, it's enjoying. On the left side, just a meter away, his entire family is being killed. Only until that moment, an animal realizes, oh my gosh, I'm going to be killed by my master. So it's very interesting. Even for us, we see death happening every day, but sometimes it hasn't really clicked that yes, we are also going to leave this body. That this is a very temporary situation. So Yudhisthira Maharaj explains this to Yamaraj, that this is actually quite amazing. It is very factual. It is very logical. We can see it happening that, you know, again and again there is birth, there is death. And still we're not convinced. Still we're thinking, I'm going to be here eternally. So Bhishma Dev is glorifying this certain point of life that we are all going to go through. As Prabhupada says, don't think this won't happen to you. So he's showing us what to do at that point. So we understand even in the science of yoga or Ayurveda, it's explained what happens at that point of death, how all your life is, how your kapha, pitta and vayu is all going. It's a commotion actually at the point of death. So nothing is moving properly. You're hot, you're cold, you're shivering, you're happy, you're distressed. So many things are going on, but at the same time for a devotee we have to live our life in such a way that we are able to remember Krishna. No matter what external situation we're in. So because, you know, bhakti does not depend on any material situation. So even, you know, a child in the womb who is encaged in bile, mucus, stool, worms biting, even a fortunate child in that situation can actually pray to Krishna. But his material facilities are really pathetic. Yet somehow or the other, this prayer, you know, that is part of the items of bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So remembering Krishna, offering prayers to Krishna, this is a part of the bhakti process. So even a living entity suffering in the womb can perform bhakti. So it doesn't really matter what external situations we have. Oh, we're living in Timbuktu, we're living in Minsk, in Siberia, in, I don't know, Vietnam, you name it. You can still perform devotional service. There's actually no excuse that a living entity cannot perform devotional service. Right at the bottom of the universe, you know, Ananta says he's, in his domain, he is reciting Bhagavatam. In different stages, they glide down the Ganges River to go in here. And that is at the lowest region of the universe. So it doesn't look so great. It's not, while you're going there, it's not so pretty, but still one can perform devotional service by hearing Krishna Katha. So this process of hearing and chanting about Krishna is not limited. Just as Krishna's glancing is not like our glancing. So we can glance over at situations. We can't really create anything by our glancing. But we understand what when Krishna is creating, because he's the primary creator and the secondary creator is Lord Brahma. When Krishna is creating, he just glances over material nature. He just looks, and then all the living entities enter. So this is Krishna's glance, because Krishna's glancing is not material. So Krishna's eyes are not material. Krishna's ear, Krishna's nose, they are not material. Is actually spiritual. So Prabhupada, when he gave this lecture in Mayapur in 1973, he was hammering this point, Krishna is not material. His glancing is not material. Just by Krishna's glancing, or just by the touch of Krishna, one automatically becomes liberated. This is how merciful Krishna is. So when people say the Lord is infallible, the Lord favors the devotees, it's actually not true, because even with the demons, you know, Putana Rakshasi, she comes and tries to poison Krishna. Krishna awards her by giving her the same position as mother. Shishupal, who wanted to decry Krishna as supremely envious of Krishna, Krishna awarded him liberation as well. He went to Vaikuntha. Prabhupada explains this in the 7th canto. Now Krishna's stance is very merciful, even for the so-called demon. So as this, the last part of this purport, Prabhupada explains that in any circumstance, Krishna's activities are absolute at all times. Krishna is absolute at all times. So nothing Krishna does is a mistake, or nothing Krishna does is, you know, done in illusion, or forgetfulness, or in a propensity to cheat. But we have those details, but Krishna doesn't. So everything Krishna does is absolute. This is actually a very big point that one has to understand, especially in our Krishna conscious life, that Krishna is actually directing everything. And every situation that we are placed in under the guidance of a spiritual master, that is Krishna saying, I want you to be situated like this. Krishna knows best. Sometimes we think we know best because we are in our own body, we are in our own kshetra, we are the knowers of our own field. But we seem to forget that the super soul is also the knower of this field and so many other fields as well. So ultimately Krishna knows best. So this is a point that we might want to ponder throughout the day, that the Lord has no wrong in any circumstance. No circumstance will Krishna ever be wrong. So whatever happens in our bhakti, it is all good. Whatever purification comes, whatever situation we're in, it is actually all good. So sometimes, you know, we see Krishna's pastimes. Specifically, Lord Bhishma is giving instructions to Yudhisthira Maharaj about religious principles, right? How to maintain society properly. He speaks about, you know, how to be a proper ruler and a leader. And we can see in our society that where there's no Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, actually there's no society. It's just a society of Shudras in leadership. So a perfect example of this mentality is we see when Hiranyakashipu wanted to become so-called immortal, he was telling his mother-in-law and his nephews after Lord Vishnu had killed Hiranyaksha, his brother. So he started citing, you know, pastimes from the different Puranas. So this is, you know, even demons back then had some kind of knowledge. They knew the potency of Vishnu. They had some knowledge of Shastra. Right now, if you go to the big demons in society, they can't tell you anything. They have no knowledge. But they pose themselves as big scholars, as scientists, etc. So Hiranyakashipu, he was preaching to his family members, explaining the science of the soul, so many different attributes like that, explaining how his brother Hiranyaksha has gone somewhere else. And then very importantly, he starts telling his family his plans about destroying the planet. So his plan was to get rid of the Brahmanas. He told his demon buddies, he called all of them and said, go to the earth planet and destroy where this sacrifice is being performed, where there's Yajic Brahmanas, where there's religion, where there's cleanliness, where there's austerity, where there's tolerance. He described that if I get rid of this, if I chop the root, and he was thinking, if I kill Vishnu, then they'll become lifeless. Because the living entity, the devotees of Krishna, are attached to Krishna. Krishna is their life, Krishna is their soul. So Hiranyakashipu is thinking, if I kill Lord Vishnu, if I destroy Brahminical culture, which is aimed at glorification of Krishna, then everything is actually destroyed. So this was his mentality to take over the world, get rid of the Brahmanas. Right? We can see now the demonic civilization, they want to get rid of cleanliness, austerity, mercy. So more liquor pubs, more brothels, more men galleries, more sinful activity. For these places, there is no Brahminical culture. In the so-called institution, there is no knowledge of the self. There is no knowledge of Krishna's shaktis, Krishna's energies. So similarly, this is what the biggest demon in history, Sri Hiranyakashipu, as the Bhagavatam explains him to be. He is, of course, an eternal associate of Krishna. Fulfilling a pastime, bless you. Where Krishna wanted to have a certain ras, Krishna wanted to fight. So the devotee fulfills that desire of Krishna. And you can see Bhishma Deva as well. He is in that chivalrous ras. Well, Krishna is Akhila Rasa Mita Murti. He is a reservoir of all rasas. So all your primary rasas and all your secondary rasas, Krishna is full with affection in all those rasas with his devotees. So Krishna always fulfills the desires of his devotees. Even if the devotee wants to see Krishna, you know, valiantly trying to fight him, the devotee fulfills that desire, and Krishna fulfills that desire. But if in those activities Krishna, you know, it is not done in a favorable way, then that is a big problem. Then Krishna submits his Sudarshan Chakra. But he's very merciful in Kali Yuga. Krishna, in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he kind of hides his Sudarshan Chakra. And Lord Nityananda permits him, please just don't use your Sudarshan Chakra. If you want to kill all the demons, then everyone in Kali Yuga will die. So Lord Chaitanya's weapon is actually his beauty, his merciful nature. That's why in the past time with all the Mayavad sannyasis, Lord Chaitanya sat down by the foot bathing path, and he just sat there and manifested his beauty. And then everyone, even the Mayavadis, they were captivated by his beauty. So Lord Chaitanya is so attractive. In Kali Yuga, that's the one potency that he's luring all these conditioned souls. So if we look on the altar, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, they are very, very merciful. So there's a wonderful pastime actually in the Chaitanya Bhagavad. I was listening to Ranath Maharaj narrating it, the glories of Lord Nityananda, that once Lord Mother Sachi had cooked a feast, and then she sat down and she was sleeping, and then she had a dream that, you know, she had Krishna Balaram deities that she was worshipping. And then out of nowhere, Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, they came out of, you know, out of the blue. They took Krishna Balaram from the altar, put them aside, and then they enthroned themselves on the altar. And then they started eating all the sweets. And then Krishna Balaram came and said, what are you guys doing? This offering is bogus thing for me. My mother has cooked. And then Mother Sakshi woke up and she was very disturbed. So she went to her son and imagined that I had this dream that, you know, I was worshipping my Krishna Balaram, and then you and someone else came and then started honoring the prasadam. And Mother Sakshi couldn't understand. Lord Chaitanya was smiling and he understood that yes, this is Lord Nityananda has now appeared, because Lord Nityananda was present for 32 or 33 years, I'm not sure, before he actually met Lord Chaitanya. So he was in separation, and that dream was a sign that Lord Nityananda has come and there shall be a meeting. So now when Lord Chaitanya then started explaining that actually Krishna Balaram, your time has elapsed, you had Krishna Leela, now it's time for Gaura Leela, so it's our time now to show mercy to all the conditioned souls. So by the pastimes of Nitya and Gauranga, the conditioned souls in the spiritual universe can be delivered. So later on, you know, the pastime goes on, eventually Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda meet in the house of Shiva's Thakur, and there's a huge, huge kirtan, intense ecstasy when the Lord finally met Lord Nityananda. So this Bhishma Dev in the later chapters will start meditating on these intimate associates of Lord Krishna, fixing his mind on their one-pointed affection towards the Lord. Specifically, he will start remembering the gopis of Vrindavan, how they would leave everything externally, their family, their children, their husbands, their mothers, their fathers. No external situation could actually get into the way of their giving pleasure to Krishna and fixing their mind on Krishna's pleasure. So the gopis of Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada explains that their bhakti or devotion is unparalleled. That no one in this world can actually fathom the great love and affection that the gopis have for Krishna. Because they're always in the mood of everything for Krishna and nothing for me. Even Lord Bhishma, his body is almost decapitated, his body is just annihilated, but he's still thinking everything for Krishna, let me glorify Krishna. Although I'm in this physical situation, he's still glorifying Krishna. So this is the mood of pure devotional service, that actually everything is for Krishna. You have that understanding that my life is for Krishna. I'm serving Krishna with my body, with my mind, with my words. So everything is meant for glorification of Krishna. So if we can practice this, this is why the process of sadhana bhakti is very powerful. If we can practice this Krishna smaranam, then at that point of death, we can actually meditate on these pastimes of Krishna. If we absorb ourselves in the Bhagavatam and we see how the Lord and His devotees are giving us examples of how to have a glorious death, that it is possible to have a glorious death, although everything in our body will be disfigured and in disarray, it is possible to fix our minds on Krishna. So Prabhupada did put a lot of emphasis on reading and understanding these pastimes so that we get the conviction that yes, if I depend on Krishna throughout my entire life, then at the point of death I will depend on Krishna. What else do I know? So it's not that once in a while we read these pastimes or we actually browse through them. Right? It's one thing to read the Bhagavatam 15 times. Yes, I've read the Bhagavatam 15 times. I've read it 50 times, 55. Yeah, that's great. But actually we have to get to a point where we're absorbing the Bhagavatam and we have to get realization from the Bhagavatam. And for that to happen, our reading should be accompanied by sincere service. That's how we get the realizations. Not that, because so many people out there read Bhagavatam, but are they serving Krishna? Because as you read the Bhagavatam, you develop a desire to actually want to serve that person, Bhagavatam. With an eternal leela, an eternal service that we're performing. We're hearing Bhagavatam and we're acting on that platform. So from our hearing should come service to Krishna. Sincere service to Krishna. So that is very important. So in the Mukunda Mala Stotra, there's King Kulushetra, he explains the situation of death, how it is very difficult to die. And then he says, my Lord Krishna, what did he say? I pray that the son of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of your lotus feet of your lordship and be locked up in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you? And there's another prayer, text 33, where he's praying that he may die immediately because his body is still healthy. He wants to die at that point because at least he'll be able to remember Krishna. Because when your body is sickly, there's pains everywhere. How will I remember Krishna? So because we never really know, it is dangerous at every step in this world when our time will elapse. So for every situation, a few verses back in a purport, Prabhupada said about Bhishma Dev and the pure devotees, that no matter what external situation they're in, that they are actually sound in mind. This is a devotee. That they may be put in hell, they may be put in different situations, but internally they are absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So the biggest test we have for that is death. That externally it's not good, but internally we are absorbed in Krishna. And in that state of consciousness, we can actually remember Krishna. So Bhishma Dev is going to start explaining the different devotees of Krishna. Here there's mention of Arjuna, how he was serving the Lord in this battlefield of Kurukshetra, thinking of Krishna. Of course, in the beginning, he had so many reasons why not to fight, just as we have so many reasons not to surrender to Krishna. So there's no reason that Krishna hasn't heard from a jiva not to surrender. All the reasons have been given, but there's no excuse not to surrender to Krishna. And by taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, we can get relief from this cycle of birth and death. We can get relief from the modes, from Rajagun, Tamagun, and Sattvagun, and be reinstated in our constitutional position as a servant of Krishna eternally. So I'll stop there and ask if there's any comments or questions.
Yes, Rabbi.
You mentioned something about Jesus Christ taking the birth of shame for showing you kind and the waters. Just ask Kashana what the word is. But in fact, if you really don't desire such perfection, they desire not to have to be Kunda. So, you mentioned that, so.
Well, in the story, we understand that, you know, in Satya Yuga, there was Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and then there was Shishupal, Dantravakra, and then there was Kumbhakarna and Ravana. So in Rasa, they all had descended for the pleasure of Krishna's pastimes. So they didn't necessarily, they were under Krishna's spell, they were acting as demons. But eventually, when their time had elapsed, they would go back and serve their Lord in Vaikuntha. So they weren't propounding to get that type of liberation. Just like the devotees, they serve Krishna, but they don't pray for these mystic potencies or different types of Sayujya, Sarupya, Shasti. They do not pray for these liberations. But they automatically come anyway, because they're practicing pure devotional service. So this is the position of a devotee. He has no material desires. And Krishna says, you know, whether one is desireless, whether one is desiring merging into Brahman, or whether one is full of material desires, still we worship Krishna. Then Krishna, because he is supremely independent, he rewards the living entity in a way that the living entity won't even be able to understand. So with personalities like Shishupal, eternally he is fixed as a residence of Vaikuntha. So after he performed his pastime with the Lord, he returned, just as Maharishchit Pakeshu was cursed to become a Vritasura. And Krishna gave him the blessing. Internally he knew he was a devotee, and he was preaching to the demons, he was preaching to the demigods, he was performing his duty, fighting Lord Indra while thinking of Krishna. And before Lord Indra could actually sever his head, it took Lord Indra 100 demigod years to chop off Vritasura's head. Prabhupada explained that Vritasura had already attained all the mystic potency, he had actually already left his body. So before Lord Indra actually cut his head off, he had already left and gone to Vaikuntha. So the devotee does not offer broken pieces of glass. Right? They do not pray for any kind of material boon or benediction. They just want to serve Krishna. Is that okay?
You mentioned more, you elaborated more on the Kunja aspect of it. But Krishna don't want the demon to become associated, or become associated with him, to have pastime with him. But Krishna don't want, plus the deity will be to serve him eternally in Guru Vrindavan. So, we have to understand that one may not become
the devotee, Prabhupada explains in this Sampradaya or in the land of Lord Chaitanya, the devotee actually, they do not aspire for anything but Goloka Vrindavan. But you have certain devotees who are in a certain mood, who are in a certain rasa. Examples in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Bhagavatam, you know, you have some who are Ram Bhaktas, and like Murari Gupta, that's it. He couldn't enter into any other bhav, into any other relationship. That was his destination. So he was a Ram Bhakta. And we have different types of, with specific demons. These demons, of course, they are devotees, because no one can fight with the Lord but his pure devotees. So the Jai and Vijay are eternally situated in Vaikuntha. That is their eternal position with Lord Narayana. So in these pastimes, these different demons, they have their eternal, their own Nityasiddha, they have their eternal constitutional position. But that is in terms of the tattva of the relationship. But in terms of rasa, Krishna takes them and covers them by his maya potency so that they act in that capacity and give Krishna pleasure in that capacity. And then Krishna takes them back to their constitutional relationship, whether in Vaikuntha or wherever, whichever planet. But for a pure devotee, they do not aspire for any own reverential relationship. Or in reverence, actually, in Vaikuntha, it is there. But in Goloka Vrindavan, there's the primary rasas. And the further you move away from Goloka Vrindavan, the awe and reverence increases. The devotee actually doesn't want that awe and reverence. And that's why Bhishma Dev will keep on referring to the gopis of Vrindavan, who were actually even higher than Arjuna, because they didn't see Krishna as God. There wasn't that mood of awe and reverence. So the devotee just aspires to serve Krishna lovingly in these primary rasas. Okay, thank you. From Srimad Bhagavatam, keep Prabhupada, keep